Welcome back to the Best Seat at the Track, the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Davey Siegel, in the off season, but man, we still got lots and lots to talk about. First and foremost, the champ is here. Big time guest on the show this week. Daniel Hemrick chats with us about his Xfinity Series Championship. Plus, our pals from Phoenix, Zach Sterniolo and Daniel McFadden, are back here on the pod to break down all the Championship 4 action that we saw in person on the grounds at Phoenix Raceway. So how about we get this all started?
Boogity, boogity, boogity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast, even though there are no green flags until the clash at the Coliseum. All right, guys, so many things to talk about, so little time to do it. I feel like, Daniel, we have to start with Sunday and Kyle Larson completing the dominant season, his 10th win of the year, 5th win of the playoffs. He wins the championship. Pit crew did it for him, but that is a deserving title if I've ever seen one. 10 wins, that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, not since, what, 2007? So, yeah, it has not happened in a very long time since I was junior in high school.
You're dating yourself.
Sophomore, junior, somewhere in that range. It's been a very, very long time. But yeah, 10 wins. It felt like the race was kind of weird in that at times it felt like there was a sense of inevitability about it. And then there'd be a caution. And then Larson was like fourth. It's like, oh, nope, never mind. And then there'd be another caution. And like you said, his pit crew got him out with one of the best pit stops of the year. And then it was inevitable that Larson was going to win it. But yeah, the best driver of the year won. There's no disputing that, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So critics of the playoff format get silenced just a little bit this year.
Yeah, just a little bit. For the Cup Series, at least. And we'll get to Xfinity and get to trucks. But Zach, I think Daniel said it pretty well. The pit crew did win him that race. But it's not like Larson had a bad car. I mean, if you ask Larson or Cliff Daniels, they'll tell you that they did not have a good car. But clearly, clean air was nice. Having a short run to end the race was nice for the five team. It seemed like Hendrick was better on short runs than Gibbs was because they had long run speed. So it all seemed to come together at the right time, much in part thanks to David Starr at the end for Kyle Larson. But definitely a deserving champion and one that a lot of people picked, but at times during the race, you didn't know if it was actually going to happen.
And I think that's kind of the beauty of this race is the fact that all four of the championship four drivers at some point during this race looked like a plausible champion and a deserving champion by the end of this race. Larson, like you said, got the right breaks. On that second to last caution, when Alfredo got into the wall, it kind of looked at that point like Larson was really in trouble. He was forced to restart sixth. Truex and Blaney had stayed out. Larson comes out of pit road, I think, fourth at that time. So he kind of mired in traffic. He was stuck in fourth. The car was losing grip. It didn't look like he was going to be able to rebound from it. And then you get that one caution thanks to David Starr's brake rotor exploding with about 30 to go. And that kind of just changed the entire outlook of what that race's end was going to be like. And incredible pit stop, thanks in large part to Larson's qualifying effort on Saturday, because at that point, he's literally just able to roll straight ahead and beat Hamlin to that white line.
Number one pit stop was big.
It was huge. It was huge. And then he did his job on the restart. It's one thing to get that spot. It's another thing to actually execute that restart.
Left Hamlin in the dust.
Yeah, left Hamlin in the dust, and then he was able to hold off a good charge from Martin Truex Jr. So all in all, just a fantastic performance by that whole number five team.
You mentioned David Starr, Zach. Is it safe to say that Martin Truex Jr. is not going to be eating at Whataburger anytime
soon? That's probably fair.
I would say that's probably fair. Although he kind of does strike me like a Whataburger guy. I don't know.
A little bit.
I feel like his vibe gives off Whataburger vibes.
I think he's a Cracker Barrel guy.
Okay, I can see that too. He's a fishing guy. He catches what he eats for dinner that night. He's a big fisher guy.
Fisherman,
whatever. Daniel, I remember at some point during the race, I think it was in stage one when there was a four-car battle for the lead, non-playoff guys, playoff guys. We turned to each other and we were saying, this is awesome. This is really good stuff. So the race itself, you know, last year at Phoenix, it was long runs, not a lot of cautions. The race was kind of okay. This race, I think, was really entertaining, and it was intriguing because not only did all four championship contenders have race-winning speed at one point or another over the course of the 312 laps, but there were some non-playoff contenders that also were running up front. Kevin Harvick, Ryan Blaney, and then you had some storylines throughout the field that were permeating up front as well. So overall, I mean, Phoenix gets a bad rap sometimes, and it had definitely before this reconfiguration, as we mentioned. But I think the race itself on Sunday was pretty good.
No, no, the first stage and a half or so were very, very good. Ryan Blaney and Kevin Harvick, they came into play there at the start of the race. They kind of faded after a bit to where it's just the championship four. But I haven't gone back to look. I don't know how many laps Ryan Blaney led on old tires.
A lot.
But it was quite a few. Like we looked at each other like, he's not supposed to be doing this, right? But he did it, and I thought that was going to lead to him still jostling for the lead late in the race, but he never did, even though he did finish fourth. He was the highest finishing non-playoff driver in Todd Gordon's last race as a crew chief.
Yeah.
So they got something to be happy about. But you know, towards in the final stage, yeah, it was pretty much just those top four guys. I'd argue Denny Hamlin never really showed winning speed.
There was a couple times in the last stage in the second where it was a really long run and he came on like gangbusters, like 30-40 laps into a run. I think even Larson said, like, wow, he's coming out of nowhere. So I see where you're going, but Hamlin at one point, he did have the fastest car. It just took his car so long to get that fast. So you knew it was going to come down to a short run like that at the end, Zach, and it seemed like things for Hamlin just didn't work out his way.
Well, that's just it. I think if that caution hadn't come out for Alfredo, and we don't know when that next caution would have come out with David Starr, assuming that rotor still explodes. But if that caution, right around the time that caution came out, Hamlin's car really started to seem like it was coming to life.
Yeah.
And granted, that was at the end of that run anyway. Truex had just come to pit road. But I think that was right around the time where Hamlin had a car that was worth the win. And we just never got to see it really shake out that 11 teams way.
So this is your guys' first championship weekend. It was my first attending it at Phoenix. What did you guys think of the vibe of championship weekend overall? There was four champions crowned. It seems like the city of Phoenix really kind of embraced things. Zach, I know when you got your haircut on, I guess it was Wednesday evening,
yep.
You were driving downtown and you're like, oh, Chase Elliott's on a building. That's cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. It had a big event feel the entire time we were there. We
Definitely.
Got there Wednesday, left Monday, and the entire time we were there, it just felt like there was no way you didn't know NASCAR was in town.
For
you had
sure.
billboards all over the place. You had stuff at the airport to tell you, hey, NASCAR's here this weekend. Right outside the convention center where Media Day was held was that giant billboard of Chase Elliott plastered on a building. And just being at the track, I felt like the crowd energy was that was the most electric crowd I've seen in person in a long, long time, especially during driver intros. I mean, I think all three of us were on the grid for that.
Yeah.
And the drivers driving by on the back of the pickup trucks, like they were booing and or cheering as loud as I've ever heard a group of fans. And it was so funny because it was so quick, one right after the other, like Hamlin goes by and Kyle Busch goes by, just showers of boos, but then the next guy in line was like Chase Elliott, and so all of a sudden they erupted with cheers. It was awesome. It just felt like a huge event, and I feel like Phoenix, both the facility itself and the city, did an excellent job promoting it.
It was I tweeted at one point, I was out on the fan area outside the track on Sunday.
The midway.
I took a picture of the throng of fans coming up like the straightaway towards the main gates. And I tweeted, we're not in Kansas anymore. because I was at Kansas a few weeks back and it was sad. It was dismal. This was a complete reversal. It felt like a completely different vibe. It was a big deal. It was in the 80s all weekend.
Yeah.
Sun was out.
Nice.
And like the crowd for like the Truck Series race was really good.
Yes, it was.
That for that was very impressive what they were able to pull out for a truck series race. I think it was maybe on par with the Xfinity race.
I thought the Xfinity crowd was electric too. I think that was the most packed crowd I've ever seen for a secondary race at any NASCAR track.
Can I get an F in the chat for the ARCA West race?
Oof.
That could be another topic entirely. But you guys talked about the truck race. Let's briefly chat about the people's champion, Ben Rhodes, gives one of the best post-race press conferences I think I've ever seen. Definitely challenges and I think surpasses 2012 Brad Keselowski on SportsCenter. If you hadn't seen it by now, Ben Rhodes was hammered. And he let everybody know that he may have had a few too many Bud Lights. Lisa
Kennedy. Four Bud Lights and yep. A decent, quote, decent amount of champagne.
Yeah, a lot of champagne. So much so that Lisa Kennedy with Toyota PR had to confiscate the Bud Light mid-press conference and give him a water. That was just something. We literally went back to our Airbnb and Daniel put the press conference on and we watched it like three or four straight times and we were laughing every single time. You don't forget Bob Pockris's name. Especially when you walk in and you say, oh, it's Bob Pockris, it's Jeff Gluck, and then you forget his name 10 minutes later. That was something. I'm glad, Daniel, that you put that on three times on loop.
Well, I mean, it's layers. There are layers to that press conference. His physicality, his speech pattern, yep. His references. Every time he opened his mouth, you did not know where he was going to go.
And it was great.
He was top tier.
It was so
top
good.
Tier. I mean, he was that's as lit as I've ever seen a driver, and especially that quickly. I mean, he couldn't have been in the media center more than like 45 minutes later after his win. And he was hammered. It was just so funny. It was so funny. I remember he was answering one of my questions and he said that he's not a nap guy, holds up four fingers and then holds up his fifth finger and then says that was my first yesterday was my first nap. Yeah, while holding up five fingers. It was just absolutely hilarious. And it's honestly, it's the personality I feel like we need. And definitely. Honestly, the kind of personality that Ben Rhodes can use to gain some sponsorship for the 2022 season.
Is Ben Rhodes a truck series lifer now, guys?
No.
I hope not for his sake.
He's 24.
I know, but he's been doing it.
He came in as a hot prospect. Came in as a hot prospect, flamed out at Junior Motorsports, wrecked a lot of stuff, comes down to the truck series, and I don't think that he's going to stay there for the rest of his career, but I think that if he does, he'd be fine with it. Because I think he's made a home there at Thor Sport. Thor Sport likes to keep veterans in the stable. You got Johnny Sauter, you got Matt Crafton, you had Grant Enfinger. So if he wants to stay, I think that there's a home for him, but I'm not sure if at 24 years old, I mean, we're all older than him. He's got a lot left to give. So I think if an Xfinity or a Cup team wants to go to his door and say, hey, man, we think you got something. We want to see what you got. I think he'd be foolish to turn that down unless he doesn't want to.
I totally forgot he had any seat time with Junior Motorsports.
Well, no, I remember him driving, I think it was that two car with RCR at one point as well. So I don't know. It's interesting to see what his career has been. I think he gets an opportunity sometime down the road in at least Xfinity. Cup, who knows? That whole series is pretty volatile at this point. But he's certainly given himself an opportunity by A, showing that he's capable of going out and winning the championship, and B, being as honestly likable as he came across on Friday night.
On a serious note, though, he did have the best average finish all season long. And I think that's a bit underappreciated because you hear about John Hunter all year and you hear about, Hattori's got some stuff, Austin Hill, and then Todd Gillen came on late in the year. But Ben Rhodes, he wins those first two races, smooth and steady, calm, cool, and collected, had a really nice season when you look at things, even bested John Hunter Nemechek when it comes to his top tens and his average finish. So in a way, you could say that this also was a very, very deserving champ. Maybe not the most deserving, Zach, because John Hunter, I think he would like a word. But at the same time, Ben Rhodes, you can't say that he's not deserving.
Why do you think I picked him on our podcast last week?
Exactly.
He was my
You're
pick.
A smart man.
No,
who,
but
who
I mean,
did I pick? I don't remember.
I think you picked JHN.
I picked John Hunter,
I put
yeah.
it wrong. Anyway, you know, Ben Rhodes, it kind of felt like this was going to be his weekend. Not because he was that much better than Smith, Crafton, or John Hunter, but just because he's been a little bit more consistent than any of those three. John Hunter's playoffs were rough, really rough, and all five of his wins this year came before the playoffs. Didn't really think that he was going to run into the issues that he ran into on Friday night, but Ben Rhodes found a way just to be there when it mattered most. And he's very deserving of this championship. He started the year off with a bang with those two wins at Daytona. He was steady all season long. Davey, you said it. All those numbers prove the season that he had, and he executed when it mattered most.
Well, Xfinity Series, we're going to get to that. But first, before we break down Daniel Hemric's victory, let's hear from the man himself. 2021 Xfinity Series champion Daniel Hemric is on the show, the second repeat guest on the podcast this year. But I think that this is a well-timed guest appearance for Mr. Hemric. So let's throw it over to our chat. We chat about his championship, his new bling bling, what the last few days have been like for him, being able to share that moment with his wife and her and his daughter. Just an unreal few days for Daniel Hemric. And finally, he does not have to listen or answer the question of when he's going to win for the first time. Here is my chat with 2021 Xfinity Series champion Daniel Hemric. Pleasure to be joined on this show this week by the 2021 Xfinity Series champion. Finally, it is Daniel Hemric. I'm sure that intro will never get old for you until next season starts and you want to win more races, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That is an intro for sure that will never get old. Something that still honestly and truly a loss of words to comprehend. But every time it gets said, it's a fact that it is true. So I'm just trying to enjoy that and for sure be very thankful for the rest of my life, right? I can't take that from you and very thankful for that.
Okay, so second cliche question in a row. When will it or when did it sink in for you that you're actually the champion, or has it not?
It hasn't, man. It really hasn't. You know, I think back to, you know, winning the race on Saturday night, you know, that part of it, that was able to sink in pretty quick, right? You know, you grow up winning races and things at various different levels, and you don't forget what that feeling of winning feels like. So that came back. That was so familiar. That came back so quick. But the whole magnitude of the stage it was on, under the circumstances it was under, and being on the car sales champions on top of that, like with every phone call I get, with every text message, with every interview or media request you get, like that's when it continues to set in. And I think it's just the beginning of that because, and I think, and rightfully so, I think it's one of those things where you never know when that stuff will stop coming in. I think more so once you stop doing all this stuff, I can take time to reflect on the actual weekend by myself,
right?
You know, go to my little room upstairs and just watch the race back and all that. I think it'll really kind of set in like what we did as a group, you know, with this Poppy Bank Toyota Super Team. But until then, I'm going to just keep kind of going with the flow of it, enjoying it. And we have done a lot of enjoying it, I promise you, since Saturday night. It's been fun.
Good. Take me into the enjoyment. Where'd you party in Phoenix? Where have you partied since you've been home? How many people, how many texts have you gotten? Take me through all of it.
Yeah. That's and I'll probably miss one of those that you just asked me, but you know, I had no clue how extensive the media tour would be after the race, and one that I am so thankful for, obviously. But it was long. I ain't gonna lie to you. I think my wife said we took the checkered flag around 8 or 8:30.
Yeah.
The photo I posted on social media of me, my wife, my little girl Ren,
it was the next morning
straight away. Yeah, but that was I think that picture was taken around 12.
Right.
12:15 a.m. Phoenix time, jeez, which is well past a 1.5-year-old's. You know, bedtime, if you will.
Say.
So that was cool. My point is that by the time that happened, they'd actually finished tearing our car down to Tech. All of our guys were on the airplane. They actually held a plane for my wife and I to get there just so we could get home and have some time for ourselves for just a little bit. We rolled back in the house at 7:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning, able to sleep an hour or two before our little girl was up ready to play. And that led to the celebration. That led to having my parents over, some of our, you know, family over and grandparents, whatnot, and just had a little cookout, nothing crazy, just chilled out, just a couple of beverages, But nothing crazy. The crazy part happened on Monday night. That's when the team was back. You know, my pit crew pits for Denny Hamlin, so they had a job to do on Sunday. So now they're back in town on Monday. My huge props to my wife, my sister-in-law Carly, and Kenzie's best friend Stephanie. You know, I can't leave out my wife's other friend Jana. Flew in from Wisconsin just to be here to celebrate with us. And they wholeheartedly put together an incredible party here at our house in Troutman, North Carolina. Invited anybody and everybody I could ever ask to be here. Some obviously couldn't make it, different states and whatnot. But you know, they threw a party together like you ain't never seen before. I mean, we had significant others of pit crew members, all of everybody that you know involved with this effort and have been involved in different efforts of mine over the course of my career. We had blow up obstacle courses in the backyard. Kids were bouncing in bounce houses. Like,
I love it.
It was just a good time for everybody, man. And we've enjoyed every minute of it. Sleep has been probably the lowest point of priority.
I was going to say.
Of all that. But you never know when it's going to be again. So we've enjoyed every second of it.
You can sleep when you're dead. This is the time to party.
That's exactly right. I actually got a little bit of slack from, you know, a lot of these teams are actually still working this week. You know, even team in particular got a little slack because, heck, they worked till 5 o'clock Monday afternoon. And they said, man, we're doing it on a Monday. I said, well, you let me know when you're guaranteed tomorrow. And nobody's going to answer that question. So tonight, let's do it. And that's what we did.
That's right. That's right. Party your ass off, man. It's well deserved. So let's talk about the backflip. Have you always done it from the roof? Because I'm used to seeing Carl do it from the door. So you've always done it from the roof. Because when you got up there, I was like, oh, man, he's going big. But you landed it and you stuck it. So you had no worries at all. I was worried a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't. That's one thing that never worried me, to be honest with you. That was probably the most natural thing for me to do. I don't know. Somebody said, man, you could surprise us when you got on the roof. I said, well, hell, it took me so long to win. I should have gone on top of the damn flag stand and did it.
Yeah, you should have.
But no, it's all fun and games. But in all reality, the roof was always a natural spot for me.
Yeah.
I think back to being 10, 11, 12 years old, doing them off Bandolero roofs to legend cars to you know, super lates and everything in between. And the roof was the location for me. At some point in there, I think over the years, I've left my helmet on accident once and done it with no big worries. And but that one, I surprised myself. Like, I promise you, when you jump up there, you're not really thinking about it.
Yeah.
And when I landed that one with the helmet on, I thought, okay, timeout. That's not okay. That could have went bad in a lot of different ways. So, but no, it was fun to be able to do it on that stage for sure.
Yeah, that helmet must have messed with your center of gravity. I would have been more scared than you. Would not have been good. I do like the pictures though, because you see Dave Rogers and your crew. They're kind of like standing behind you, and I think they're confident in you, but there's a little bit of worry in their faces. But you're midair, ready to land this thing, and you had the utmost confidence. So they were just worrying about nothing. They just hadn't seen you do it with their team, with their car, so they had nothing to worry about.
Exactly right. The irony of that being Dave Rogers, right? You realize Carl Edwards' last one. Well, last
to the day.
To the exact same weekend.
Crazy.
Obviously, you know, him doing the flip, the backflips, obviously, like, you can't script that stuff. And that's it's unbelievable. So, those guys, to see the picture of me in the car is one thing, but to see their faces when you turn the camera around,
the best.
My gosh, that's the best part, man, is being able to just have everybody else enjoy it as much as I am, if not more, just because, you know, you put the work in anything. And when you go and have results, right, there comes a point where, and I don't want this to sound bad, there comes a point where that's what you're working for. That's what you hope. That's what you plan for, or moments like that. Yeah, to see those guys be able to enjoy it like they've been able to, like, that's all the gratification I can ask for. That's been special.
Yeah, for sure. Is your hand a little heavier with that big old championship ring?
How about that thing, huh?
Look at that, baby.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, from what I understand, it's a temporary, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
They Steve Phelps, Jeff Gordon, a couple of those, and all the folks from Xfinity, right, they presented me this thing at the bar outside of the racetrack there with a bourbon in hand for myself.
Yep.
Saluting the fans with a toast like that was really cool. And they said it was only right to give me this thing. From what I understand, though, our particular custom ones for our 18 team and myself will be handed out at the banquet. But
okay,
I walked out of there with this thing and it hasn't came off. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you got to keep that on forever, man. All right, let's get to the race itself and that race winning move coming off of four. I know you pride yourself on being a clean driver. For what it's worth, I thought that that move was as clean as it can get considering the circumstances. And I actually asked Austin after the race, you know, the move that Daniel pulled on you, do you think that was fair game? Would you have done the same thing? So I'll ask you straight up as well. You know, I know that you pride yourself on being that type of driver that likes to race clean. We saw it at Martinsville, how you race with Noah on the outside and the inside. So coming to the line to win a championship and your first race, anybody would say that they would wreck their grandmother to win that race and win that championship. But looking back on that move, I'm sure you've watched the replay a couple times. Did you execute that the way that you wanted to? And did you think that it was fair game?
I'll put it this way. Austin Dillon called me on Sunday morning. He says, man, I don't know how you pulled it off like that. He said, I'd probably had one or both of us upside down on fire. trying to make sure I got back to the line first. But yeah, you're right, man. You want to be the integrity of your peers, right? The people you're competing with. You want to know that you got to have that respect between one another. And I have so much respect for Austin Cindric, his entire team. Just a class act group of individuals. And we've raced hard all year, man. We've raced hard. We raced clean. And I like to think that that was the nature coming to turn four. Obviously, a lot bigger moment, though, right? I mean, it's a lot bigger moment for your career. It's career defining for him and I. He's been fortunate to do it. He's handled being the Xfinity Series champion, defending the Xfinity Series champion with the most utmost class you can ever ask anybody to do it with. He knew I was going to be aggressive. He knew that he was in the most vulnerable spot. I've heard him say that. And he drove into three knowing that. And when he did, he gave me just enough 2 or 3 feet to get a little clean air and drive just needed enough to the left rear. And it's interesting is I'd kind of formed that move the restart before and got side by side with a big run before the caution came out. So I knew our car was capable of it. Dave Rogers made the right adjustment to let me get there. You have to lay it on a line, right? Like, yeah, I've got my opportunity next year with a colleague, but am I going to go there and be the second place guy and be not a champion? Or am I going there as a defending series champion and a winner? And I like the way the second part of that sounds way better than the other part. But more so for my race team currently, right? For Joe Gibbs, for Joe Gibbs Racing, Poppy Bank. I mean, the people that have, you know, laid all their trust in me to be the guy for them. Like, that's all you can ask for is that moment, and that moment to be able to excel and to put your racing in a position that, you know, they've worked their entire lives. I mean, worked their asses off to enjoy. And the window was open. Pay window was open. We got door to door with him, and obviously he did what he was supposed to, right? Make contact. Yeah. I break his momentum. I'm coming by him. He hangs a left in my door, and he wants to break my momentum because he don't want to be the other guy, right? I've been that guy 10 times. Thankful that, you know, the one time, though, it did work out for us. It worked out on that particular stage.
It sure did, man. It sure did. So you've had your time in the Cup Series. Now you're an Xfinity Series winner. You're a damn Xfinity Series champion. What was your dream? I know, right? It's never gets old. What was your dream when you're growing up racing in Legends cars and you're winning these insanely big Legends races? You're winning the All-American 400. Did you have a dream specifically of getting to a certain point or accomplishing certain things in racing? And if so, have you accomplished that with now being a NASCAR National Series champion?
Man, I tell you, for me, there was never a moment where I said, man, I'm going to be a champion in NASCAR, be a champion at the Cup Series. It was always the next opportunity is the one I worked for. That was it. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know where it was going to be, nor what level it was going to be. But I knew that I was going to work for whatever it was. And when the dust settled, it was going to be what it was going to be. And I think I've tried to carry that with me, you know, whether it was getting those opportunities at the truck level for the first time, building and getting to the Cup Series and having an opportunity to compete on that stage.
Yeah.
I think I will say that, like, experiencing those moments, you know, and then feeling like, I'm going to use the same words I use in the post-race interviews, that to feel my life unraveling before me, to feel like, okay, I've built all this stuff from the time I was 5, trying to get here. I'm here and now it's gone. Like, what comes next? And the only thing that still stayed true was what I said. That's continue to show up, continue to work. And if you didn't do that, for sure, that next opportunity wasn't going to be there. So that's that's what I dreamed of. I dreamed of just showing up. I dreamed of just being there and enjoying and trying to continue moving your feet forward, no matter knowing the right direction or not, because none of us know, right? You just right. You try to make the best decisions with the most information you have in front of you. And just hope that I can position myself in those right places at the right times. And fortunately, more times than not, it's easy to look and remember the tougher times, to be honest with you. But it's those couple of moments, couple of key moments. If you've had 1,000 tough ones, those key 5 moments in my career, give or take, that have continued my career on the trajectory that you can ever hope for. And that's what I take from it. That's what I've always hoped for myself and for anyone.
What are your guys' off-season plans? I hope some sleep will be in order for you guys. I know getting adjusted to college is going to be a big task, but some sleep, new team. What else is on the docket for you, Kenzie, and your little girl, Ren?
Yeah, it's a great question. My wife's from Oklahoma, so every year we alternate between being here in North Carolina for Thanksgiving or Christmas or there. And this year it so happens we're here for Thanksgiving, which works out great with media stuff and everything we got going on in the weeks leading up to Thanksgiving. And then we'll spend spend Christmas in Oklahoma. Usually there's a small little ski trip involved. Last year we also try to go to somewhere warm for a couple of days. And
yeah.
I don't know with still the world and the state it's in, if we'll be able to pull that off, but
yeah,
I promise you wherever it's at, there will probably be a bourbon in hand. There will be a lot of friends involved and a lot of memories made. So we're looking forward to that. It's definitely going to be a little different celebrating this year as the seat that I now sit in. But for sure, looking forward to enjoying it with everybody that's been there with me along the way.
It was one of the most popular wins in the NASCAR garage that I can remember in a really, really long time because you're one of the best guys out there. We're stoked for you, my man. And I will say to end things here, you've come a real damn long way from putting gas from the racetrack in your damn Honda Civic to now being an Xfinity champ, man. How about that? Let me see the bling one more time before we go.
See it.
That thing is nice. That thing's shiny and heavy. That's what we like.
Right.
Daniel Hemric, congratulations, my friend. Happy for you. Enjoy your off season and soak it all in. Get some sleep, please.
I can promise you all of the above. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate it.
White Flag is out on the podcast this week. Big thank you to not only Daniel, but Tyler Overstreet, who went 1-for-2 this weekend in winning championships as a PR rep. I was teasing him over email. I was like, hey, man, batting 500 is not too bad, but of course he wants some more. So thank you to Tyler for helping coordinate that conversation, and thank you to Daniel as well for giving us some time on a busy week and a busy media tour for the new Xfinity champ. Let's chat about him because that was probably the best race of the weekend, the best story of the weekend. Just so cool to see him finally get that victory, the way that he celebrated and the way that he did it, Daniel. I mean, coming off of turn 4, I'm standing by the 22 pit box. I want to get their reaction. I pan over to the big screen. I see Hemric somehow is side by side with him coming to the line. And then he wins the damn race. His first career win comes in the biggest one of them all, and he gets that championship. He did what he had to do coming out of turn 4, and he was not going to apologize for it, nor should he.
Well, at least I think you saw what happened. I was next to the Hemric pit box. I was behind it. And the last time I saw them on the video board was them diving going into turn 3. I didn't think Hemric was going to get there.
I didn't either.
And then they disappear, and I look out onto the front stretch, and then all of a sudden they flash into view, and Hemric's car is just slightly ahead of Cindric's.
Yeah.
And across the line they go. So I didn't see the banging or anything until later. But then they erupted in the Hemric pit box, and the show was on from there. Which I took video of it, and you can actually I put it on my YouTube page for anyone who wants to see it. YouTube.com/DanielMcFadden of the celebration and the flip. Hemric's first backflip in celebration since 2015 at the All-American 14, 400 in Nashville. 14, 15, one of those years, the All-American 400 at Nashville. So this was a long time coming, like Daniel Hemric. He said he would relive everything again in order to repeat what he got to experience Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, I was at the end of pit road watching that one, and I kind of had a similar video, at least of, you know, watching the video board first and then zooming in on turn four. That finish, I feel like, and I said this in the car ride back to our Airbnb, you know, that whole race really encapsulated what I think all the best parts of NASCAR are. We had a lot of long runs. We had a lot of good close racing up at the front and throughout the field. There were some accidents because the cars were difficult to drive. And then at the end of the race, when all of the marbles were on the line, you had the second place driver drive it in deep, make some contact, but not wreck the guy, and suddenly goes ahead, wins the race. Just an amazing story for Daniel Hemric. Very deserving. I know, yes, he got all that way without ever winning a NASCAR series, a national series championship, or race, let alone championship. But in that moment, the season that he strung together, I think everything about that moment was perfect. And I feel bad for Austin Cindric in a sense, because he and Allmendinger had the two best cars all season long. But that's a fair move by Daniel Hemric. I don't know that I can sit here and say it's the cleanest move I've ever seen ever, but there's no way it was dirty. It was completely fair game.
Yeah.
And he did exactly what he should have done in that moment.
Well, you guys, Cindric said himself that it was. Cindric himself said, like, he expect that from someone in his shoes. So
you guys just heard Daniel's answer. I asked him, you know, if he executed that move to his liking, if he was planning it ahead of time, and you guys heard what he said. I mean, you got to do what you got to do to win a championship. Most people look at that move if they were in that situation, and they would have done the same thing, probably worse. I mean, Austin Dillon called him the next morning and said, I don't know how you did it the way you did it, because I would have either wrecked myself or wrecked Cindric in the process. And that's a Cup Series winner, Daytona 500 champion, that's talking to Daniel Hemric. And to your point, Zach, as well, I mean, Daniel Hemric's win is kind of what the format is built on. It's performing at the right time, at the right place. You don't necessarily have to have a history of winning, a history of winning championships. But what you need to do is perform when it matters most. Chase Elliott did that last year. It goes across the board for Truck Series, Xfinity Cup. That's how the format's built. I say it all the time. You could win 35 races in a row, lead every lap of the season finale besides the last one, and you couldn't win the championship. That's just how the format is built. So don't hate the player, hate the game. But I don't think anybody's hating the player, because, Zach, Daniel Hemric's win and championship, probably one of the most beloved and positive victories that I've seen in the NASCAR garage in a really long time.
Completely agreed. And, you know, I keep going back to the fact that I'm so glad that he won this championship while winning the race, and that he doesn't have to deal with still, you know, with hearing, okay, sure, you won the championship, but you finished second to do it, or anything along those lines. I think he's such a nice guy, and that's hurt him on the racetrack in the past, because of that lack of aggression that he's shown at the National Series level, has kind of cost him. We saw it at Martinsville last week when two races ago, when he kind of went to play it safe against Gregson. Instead, we see this time around, he, when presented with the opportunity to win a race, to win a championship in the final corner in overtime, he was willing to make the move that he needed to make.
Forgot that it was an overtime.
Yeah. Well, everything about it was just so... The moment was so perfect for him, and he executed it perfectly.
Well, think about, like, all the stuff Hemric's been through this year that seems like the racing gods kept throwing stuff at him.
Oh my God.
To keep him out of victory lane, speeding up pit road, accidents, whatever. And then it comes down to this race. And for the first time, so something bad happened to everyone else. Finally, Hemric. Allmendinger spins from his loose tire, Gregson gets into the wall in turns one and two, and then Cindric's has to fend him off for two laps, and he doesn't do it. Everything finally went in Hemric's way for the first time in 2021.
Yeah, Cindric was basically at that point just sitting duck, and Hemric made the move and won the race.
This was kind of the end of the era, as we know it, of NASCAR stock car racing at the highest level, that is, in the Cup Series. No more center door numbers, no more five lug nut pit stops, no more bodies that are tinkered on by the race teams. There's so many different things that we can talk about. And, you know, Ryan Newman's potential last race, Where's Ryan Preece going to go? Where's Anthony Alfredo going to go? All these different moving parts and pieces. And it did feel kind of like the end to an era. Some positivity associated with it and some nostalgia already longing for what we now are probably not going to see ever again with those certain things. I don't know what I'm going to miss the most, so I'll ask you guys just real quickly, what do you think you're going to miss the most that we saw for potentially probably the final time at Phoenix? I'll go to you first, Daniel.
Probably the numbers centered on the doors.
That could come back. I think that's the one thing that potentially has the best shot.
Because I don't – make it optional. Like, yeah. There's – like, I know – I remember a few minutes ago, like, Newmark at Roush Fenway said, like, we've had our discussions with sponsors and we don't really care about it. It's like, so just let if the teams want to do it, let them do it. If they don't, just whatever.
I'm with you.
But no, that the number's there. If you're going to move them back. I don't get the forward part.
Disagree.
but yeah, I think that's going to be the thing that it's going to take getting used to.
How about you, Zach?
I think for me, it's going to be the sound. I saw the next gen car in person at Darlington making some pace laps with Austin Cindric behind the wheel, and it sounds mean. It sounds, you know, throaty, and everything that, you know, I think a good sports car sounds like, and a good muscle sports car sounds like. But NASCAR stock car racing has always had a very distinct sound, and we'll still get that in Xfinity, and we'll still get that in trucks,
right?
But at the top level in Cup, it's gonna be an adjustment, I think. And when we were at the track Friday and Saturday, especially, you had that looming sense of this was an era coming to an end. I think there's still a lot of optimism looking toward 2022 and in the future, but you could feel that at the racetrack that this was the end of a lot of things before these new beginnings. But yeah, that sound is kind of what jumps out to me.
That's a good one. Even though we're going to have the same sound of the pit stops and the pit guns and the five lug nuts and Xfinity and trucks, at least for the foreseeable future, that's what I'm going to miss the most. That is a sound that I put up there on my Mount Rushmore of sports sounds. And I'm biased because we cover NASCAR and we love NASCAR, but there is nothing like that zing, 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 zing. I put it in my TikTok this week because I'm going to miss it already so much. And I think we all grabbed lug nuts after the race too, because we don't know if we're ever going to see big ol' or smaller lug nuts on Cup Series cars ever again. And that's crazy to think about, but the way that the next-gen car is situated and the way that the sport is kind of going, we don't know if that's ever going to happen again. So even though we'll see that in trucks and Xfinity and there will be that nostalgia that you can dip into, that's probably what I'm going to miss the most. I do think, though, Daniel, you actually may be in for a treat, because I don't think that the numbers are going to stay in front of the door. I think that what they may do is they may give designers and they may give teams the option to move them back, move them forward, make them smaller, make them bigger, put it in the center. I think that's probably the best thing to do. But if they want continuity, then they may hear from a lot of people, well, we don't like this. But it all comes down to money and sponsors. So if the sponsors like more space, if there's more sponsors coming in, then I think that the bet is kind of made in that respect. But I see where you're coming from with the numbers.
But isn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong, chrome numbers are going to be allowed again?
In some form or fashion, they have not released details of that, but they do say, I think they have said that reflective or chrome type numbers, like the Wood Brothers 21, they will be probably allowed, yeah.
Which I am all here for them, yeah, and Trackhouse.
Me too.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Checkered flag is out on the podcast this week. This is usually where we have our bets in our predictions, but since we don't got a race this week, we ain't got none of that. So let's talk about the next race that we are going to have on the docket here in a couple months. That is the Busch Light Clash at the LA Coliseum. The format has been unveiled. I'm not going to run through it because I think it'll get confusing for me again, and it will be very confusing if I say it out loud and nobody's looking at it on paper. So, but in all seriousness, Zach, on paper, it is a little confusing. But if you do look at it and you see this chart and how it flows and everything, it's kind of easier to understand. Do you understand it now? Do you think that we have a good format for the Clash?
I do. I think it's a perfect sort of tribute to short track Saturday night racing, because we're getting heat racing out of this. We're going to get qualifying. That's going to set up the lineups for the heat, and the results of the heat plus the last chance qualifier will set up the field for the main event. 150 laps seems a little long for the feature, if I'm honest. I feel like we could have done with like 100 or 125. 150 seems like a lot. But
I think
23 said,
cars is too many as well.
Yeah. I'm a little I'm curious to see how all 23 are going to fit on that
we'll
racetrack.
See. I'm hoping it works out, but we'll see, Daniel.
You and me both.
So, like, outside of the main event, though, with all the heat races combined, how many laps are we will we be seeing on that Sunday?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, probably over, what, 250, 300? Maybe.
Something along those lines. Which I think is good for the sake of the fans that are going to be showing up to this.
Get your money for it. Yeah.
Be a must-see event.
Also, like, you're traveling all the way across the country. I mean, I don't think if you're traveling from North Carolina to California, I think there needs to be some meat on the main event.
Yeah. But then, you know, I think every team that has a charter is going to be basically heavily suggested, put it that way, to attend the Clash or try to qualify for the race. But there's definitely going to be some of those cars that don't have a charter or open teams that are going to say, I don't really want to spend all that money, all that time to go out there just to run a heat race and go back home. And there's probably going to be some teams that also are open and don't have a charter that say, hey, we got nothing better to do. Why not? This will be fun. We'll get in front of a new audience. We'll get some new fans from it, maybe some publicity. You never know. So I think that it'll be interesting, definitely. I'm not sure about the length of the race, the amount of cars in the field, but I so want it to succeed. I think that NASCAR is going to do everything in their power to make it succeed. So I'm hoping but nothing but good things for the Clash. One person that's not going to be there is Ben Bayshore, who had two loose lug nuts after the race at Phoenix. And even though there's not going to be five lug nuts in the Cup Series next year, he's suspended for the next race when there will be one center lock lug nut. Doesn't really add up to me. I don't know. I think there could have been a different punishment, but that's why I don't make the big bucks, Zach.
I tend to agree with you there. I will say that if there's one race that you can be okay with missing, it's
definitely
probably going to be this one rather than the duels, because I was actually expecting the duel to be what he ended up missing.
The Clash does not relate to anything.
That's nothing. Just it. You're racing at the Coliseum.
Yeah, like, it's a one-off.
You know, the duels, that matters for how you line up for the Daytona 500, and, you know, that's going to be the first time we see it in a racing format there, whatever. So if I'm Ben Bishore, I'm probably I'm ticked that I can't be there for the Clash officially, but I'll take that over the alternative.
Yeah, Daniel, I don't really think it matters in the long term, but
well, if I'm Ben Bishore, I think I'd like some practice time with that car. Because they do get practice Saturday, so you're kind of robbed of having that hands-on experience of what it's going to be like to. True. Deal with that car if it's damaged and stuff like that. So you might be slightly behind everyone else when it comes to working knowledge of the next gen car.
Yeah, that's true as far as the damage goes. But the track itself to me doesn't relate to anything else that they're going to go to. And you know, I understand it's a short track, so maybe you can learn some things for Martinsville. But that's really the only thing that even comes remotely close.
Yeah. We'll see. Well, fellas, thank you for joining me on the pod today. Thank you for joining me this weekend and dealing with my shenanigans far and wide, the good, the bad, the ugly. Still kind of mad at you, Daniel, that you didn't partake in our Waffle House excursion on Sunday night. But
I was there. So
yeah, but you didn't get anything.
Sorry, I don't like breakfast food.
The
unreal. Go ahead. Leave the meeting. This is all we need to know. Have we all adjusted back to East Coast / Central time? I'm kind of there.
Yesterday was rough.
Yeah,
yesterday was rough for me.
What about you,
Zach? I was very tired by like 5 o'clock. I was like,
I'm struggling, and I you couldn't see me because I was having some technical difficulties today. But I was absolutely slamming a medium iced coffee while we were recording this podcast. So I'm getting there.
Basic white girls.
I'm slamming a Mountain Dew Voodoo flavored. It's a mystery flavor.
Plug those sponsors.
Got to. I am slamming nothing because I'm currently recording this at NBC Sports Washington, where I am going to go get back to work. So thank you guys for joining me. It's great hanging out with you this weekend. And thank you guys for listening to the Front Stretch Podcast. We got another episode in the can next week. Championship crew chief Cliff Daniels is going to be with us next week. So stay tuned to that. And we'll give you an update on what the offseason may look like for podcasts moving forward in that episode next week. But if you like what you heard, leave a rating and a review. Subscribe on any podcast platform you choose. We should be available there for your consumption. For Zach Sterniolo and Daniel No Waffle House at Night McFadden, I am Davey Siegel. We will catch you on the flip side at the best seat at the track.